that idea that, oh, gamers don't have the attention span for reading is a negative stereotype that's pretty prevalent in publishing that A, ignores a number of popular gaming properties either started from books and were adapted or went the opposite direction and entire book line, best-selling book lines have been built around those gaming franchises. Every new Halo novel, you know, hits the bestseller list.
That's Guy LeCharles Gonzalez of the Panorama Project, which is undertaking the first major study in years on the connection between readers and libraries and how that affects book sales and discoverability. You'll find, as I did, that a lot of our assumptions about readers today are probably inaccurate, but what's really going on? Well, without data, we'll never know, and I guess that's the point. But first, I'd like to welcome you to Inside Independent Publishing with IBPA. I'm an independent publisher and your host, Peter Goodman of Stonebridge Press. This podcast is brought to you by IBPA, the Independent Book Publishers Association, at IBPA-online.org. IBPA's mission is to help you become a better publisher through advocacy, education, and tools for success. If you're not a member, consider joining and becoming part of the IBPA family. Now, let's get started. Today, I'm talking with Guy LeCharles Gonzalez, who is the project lead for the Panorama Project, which is all about discovering the key role that libraries play in book and author discovery, which, of course, makes what they do very interesting to book publishers. So welcome to the podcast, Guy.
Oh, thanks, Peter. Glad to be here.
Tell us a little bit more. What's your goal with the Panorama Project?
So Panorama Project exists largely to answer the question of what is the impact public libraries in particular have on both the discovery of books and authors as well as the sales of their books. There's a twofold approach when it comes to libraries. There's the standard, you know, everybody loves libraries. It's rare to find somebody with a negative word about libraries unless maybe, you know, at the local level when they're debating over funding. But in the publishing industry, for the most part, you know, every author has some early formative story about how libraries either fed their passion as readers or in some cases even nurtured their interest as budding writers. And then there's the business version of that conversation where public libraries are either seen as a great and important avenue for discovering books that help find readers and help encourage sales outside of the library. And there are some publishers who increasingly believe that libraries may be negatively impacting their sales, cannibalizing, particularly on the ebook side, as library circulation of ebooks has become a lot more popular. So Panorama Project was initiated a couple of years ago. I joined last summer, but it was around for about a year before I came on board. And it was really pulled together to answer that question with data. So rather than dealing with emotional responses to libraries, positive or negative, the goal was to dig in and see if we could find some data to really get to the heart of what public libraries' real impact was, positive or negative.
Right. Was it set up at the instigation of library people or publishing people or both?
It developed partly out of Overdrive, which is the dominant player on the library ebook side, public libraries specifically. They are also in the school and academic space, but not nearly as dominant in those two areas. So Overdrive is kind of the major conduit between public libraries and publishers. They are the wholesaler through whom libraries get access to publishers' ebooks.
And I guess the idea is that you were saying of the two parts of the story. One is your own personal story. You know exactly how libraries impacted you as a young writer, as a young reader. But when it gets to the business side of things, it's a little bit more murky, isn't it? A lot of people have these assumptions about the impact of libraries, but I guess without data, nobody really knows for sure. So people make a lot of gut-level decisions?
Correct. There's an absence of data that in large part you can park right at Amazon's doorstep. Amazon is very selective about what little data they do release, and it's always obviously to their benefit. So one of the big question marks in the industry overall is, what is the actual size of the ebook market? You know, AAP publishes its reports that are purely reflective of the major traditional publishers and a number of smaller and mid-sized traditional publishers. But as a lot of your audience is aware, there's a huge, not fully measured market of self-publishing and independent publishing activity that is either exclusive to Amazon or heavily reliant on Amazon that there is no defined industry number for. So one of the big question marks for traditional publishers, particularly who were seeing their ebook sales plateau after years of hockey stick growth and then steady decline, there was a lot of questions around, well, what is causing this? Is it the price of traditional ebooks being more expensive, in some cases more expensive than the print version on Amazon? Is it competition from self-publishers? Is it the increased ability to get ebooks through your public libraries? Is it some combination of all those three? Publishers have some visibility into their library ebook sales. They have very limited visibility into their library print sales and next to no visibility into their library print circulation. They do have some sense of how their ebooks are circulating in libraries. And that's the one area where there is a little bit of data, because Overdrive has been willing to publicize that data in ways that Amazon generally hasn't.
What do you think is the big advantage to both publishers and libraries in understanding this data a bit better? Is this simply, I guess for publishers, is it mostly to drive their marketing decisions and their pricing decisions? And is it for libraries to better understand their consumers and the communities they serve?
I'd argue the consumer angle is actually the most important for both, because personally what I think we're seeing is a change in consumer behavior. So from a publisher perspective, you know, libraries, there are no publicly available numbers, but most estimates are for your bigger traditional publishers. Libraries, it can be as much as 5 to 10% of their overall revenue. And on a book-by-book level, that percentage grows for midlist, where libraries are a lot more likely to support midlist titles that booksellers are not going to shelve and take a chance on. Libraries also don't return books, so they're a pretty steady source of revenue. But as ebooks have grown in libraries, the pricing of library ebooks, the ability to relend an ebook in perpetuity versus a print book, which at some point may fall apart and they'll have to buy a new copy. There are definitely legitimate questions on the publisher side where they need to understand, are they in fact losing consumer sales to library circulation, or are they reaching readers they wouldn't have reached otherwise because those readers never would have bought those books? It's kind of a version of the old piracy conversation.
Right. I know that has been a source of controversy in the past year, and libraries, I guess the American Library Association, and others, and perhaps even I saw this on your website too, where libraries are kind of saying that no, it's not the case that libraries cannibalize bookstore sales. In fact, that it's one of the great sources of discovery, that many of the people who first borrow a book, say for free from a library, end up buying it in print or buying the ebook version, and then they also become fans of the author and end up going out and buying more books. Is that demonstrable evidence, and is that something you're trying to nail down through this project?
So that is data that has been surfaced in a number of different consumer research studies. There's no way, nobody's got the access to the kind of data that would make that a definitive statement. But there's, over the years, going all the way back to Library Journal and Bowker's patron profiles research in 2015, 2016, Pew Internet did some research around library usage. And then the research we're currently filled in, we're doing a follow-up basically to see what's changed in those past 5 or 6 years. There is, I will say, there is more publicly available data to support the belief that library circulation doesn't cannibalize sales than there is publicly available data that says they do. Both are still, either way, relatively anecdotal statements. That part of what Panorama Project wants to do is get to a more definitive answer, positive or negative.
And do you think it's possible to do that through your access in the data? You're getting enough cooperation and you feel you're getting enough deep level data coming your way that you're able to make those determinations with some degree of certainty?
So we've had some success with some single title studies. One of the ones we reference a lot is Overdrive. It works with publishers on what's called a big library read campaign, where a particular ebook becomes available with no restrictions, simultaneous access to, in Overdrive's model, it's global. So they are not just U.S. public libraries, they're global. And so to participate in that program, a publisher basically makes that ebook available, not on its regular limited restrictive terms, but in an unlimited simultaneous access for a period of time, usually 2 to 3 weeks. Libraries participate using those books as community reads. And so what we've been able to do is measure the impact before and after on that book sales. Historically, those books tend to be either never brand new releases. They've usually been in the market for at least a month or two before they join this program. So there's some initial sales data without the unfettered access through libraries. There's the data during that period, and then there's data after that period ends. And in each campaign that we've measured, at worst, it's been a relatively flat trajectory, no negative impact. And at best, there's been a spike across the board, both obviously in circulation in the library, which means libraries ultimately, when that program ends, end up buying more copies themselves to continue to meet that demand. But also the publishers, and we can only get this data from the publisher, the publisher has also been able to show a spike in consumer sales in that period as well, which aligns with that availability in libraries.
Well, that's fascinating. That's kind of like a scientific lab experiment with a control.
Absolutely.
So that you can, yeah. Has that sort of study been done before?
Not to my knowledge, publicly. Every publisher, you know, one thing I do know is publishers work with Overdrive behind the scenes on a lot of this stuff. And that it's one of the challenges we've run into with Panorama Project. There's two versions. There's A, publishers are very leery about anything that smacks of collusion. They got in a lot of trouble a few years ago for that. So they are very leery about any cross-publisher initiative that could even possibly be perceived as collusion. And that's made the kind of industry-level data gathering that we'd love to do a huge challenge. Then there's also just the competitive aspect. These, at the end of the day, regardless of how much a publisher loves libraries, these publishers are competing with each other. So there's a lot of this research and data that happens behind the scenes that doesn't get publicized because it's proprietary. You know, Penguin Random House doesn't want to give Macmillan an upper hand in any channel. So any of their learnings in the library space, they're not necessarily willing to make fully public with the industry, because then their major competitors now are privy to that research as well. So on a case-by-case basis, individual publishers absolutely have this ability to do this kind of analysis with Overdrive themselves. What Panorama is trying to do is build a structure where some of this can happen in the daylight so that we can answer definitively the question, libraries' actual impact overall is X. And that impact may vary between bestsellers and midlists and long dormant backlist. That's another.
And when do you expect results to be available?
So we've got a variety of initiatives. This year, our two major initiatives, one is research oriented and one is a practical best practices thing. So the research we moved forward with this year, recognizing that getting publishers to contribute sales data on a large scale was going to be a long-term project. Instead, we decided, all right, where can we bring the industry together to work towards a common goal? And that's where we turned to consumer research. It's been 5 or 6 years since Pew's last real dive into consumer behavior related to books and libraries. generally speaking, consumer research that looks at media overall, books tend to quickly get dismissed because, most Americans only read a book or nothing. So books end up, when you put them in the context of media overall, books end up getting sidelined as this very niche interest and then don't get a lot of deeper study. Or books get studied on their own in a vacuum, ignoring their existence in the larger media ecosystem.
Is this the Immersive Media and Reading 2020 project?
Correct. So that research initiative, we brought together a number of industry associations, so ALA, IBPA, Book Industry Study Group, Authors Guild, and PubWest, all had representatives on the research committee where we developed the methodology and the survey tool that we're going to launch shortly after Labor Day. This was obviously delayed and impacted heavily by the COVID pandemic, but we've made some adjustments and we're ready to address both consumer behavior overall, but also the impacts COVID have had. And we're looking at books also in conjunction with streaming media and with gaming, two other areas that are very immersive, similar to reading a book, that have been even more disrupted by digital platforms, but tend to be a bit more transparent when it comes to sales and consumer behavior. And from a book side of things, both of those media tend to be ignored. You know, one of my favorite things is book publishing thinks of gaming as this cute little niche that every now and then drives sales of a sci-fi book, ignoring that even a half decent selling game sells more than every book that hits the New York Times bestseller list throughout the year.
Well, I find this fascinating because I think a lot of publishers spend their time talking and maybe worrying about the internet streaming, all these different reading options that people have now and how it may be impacting book sales. People may be reading just as much, but maybe they're reading a lot of stuff for free, or they're reading in very, very small snippets. They're reading long form, maybe on internet sites like Medium. I notice that you're talking about books, film, TV, and gaming as ways of driving book sales, and I could certainly see where that's true. Maybe they have a Luigi and Mario novel sort of coming
up. No. So what we're looking at is not those media's impact on book sales directly. We're looking at consumers' engagement with those media to see how they differ. So book readers are our control point. So you, as a person taking this survey, our first...
Okay.
Yeah. So what we're trying to measure is, across the spectrum of book readers, what else are they engaged in, and how does that correlate with the depth of engagement with books? So if you're a person who reads one or two books a year, but you're also like a huge gamer, that says a lot about where your time is going versus you're an avid reader, but over during the COVID pandemic, you've been spending a lot more time on Netflix and a lot less time reading.
I mean, what does that reflect exactly? Is that maybe differing by age, by education, or by what's happening in the culture these days?
We're going for nationally representative demographic sampling, so we're looking at both ethnicity and regionality. So we'll be able to look at differences at an age level, at an ethnic level, race and ethnicity, as well as regional differences, but all based on the premise of, first and foremost, you identify as a book reader. You've read at least one book in the past year, so we are definitely measuring the book reading audience, because that's the other part, is you may never buy a book, but you may be one of the most engaged readers out there who's actively writing reviews and engaged in social media. You're doing that kind of word of mouth influencing that publishers love, but maybe you never buy a book yourself because you're a library patron, or you always just borrow books from friends. There is nuance to book engagement and readers versus strictly looking at book buyers. And I think as we think about, you know, what's changed over the past 10 years in publishing, way more books being published, traditional and self-published. You've got print, you've got ebook, you've got audiobooks. Audiobooks are currently growing. Ebooks have either plateaued or are still growing, depending on your perception of the market itself. And print has remained surprisingly resilient, despite, 10 years ago, ebooks were going to kill print. Like, that was the accepted premise, and it was just a question of how fast were ebooks going to kill print. Reality, fast forward 10 years later, ebooks have settled into, in some areas of publishing, a negligible percentage, in some areas, a huge percentage, but print remains the dominant driver of revenue in the industry across the board. So one of the things we want to really dig into is what's changed with consumer behavior around book readers, so that we can also get into the difference between people who read books don't necessarily buy every book they read, and how has that changed over time as well.
Well, do you think, I mean, any reader only has a limited amount of time today. If people are kind of drifting away from print books and ebooks and spending a lot more time reading news media online or watching Netflix or playing their computer games, do you think that is in the long term going to impact the book industry in terms of sales, number of units sold, revenue? And even the kind of books that are published, are people going to be publishing maybe for a gaming audience with maybe a shorter attention span, shorter books, larger type, that sort of thing?
So, I mean, that's an assumption that those publishing programs don't already exist, and they do. And that's I think where IBPA's participation in this study was important for me, because there's a tendency to talk about publishing purely through the lens of the Big Five. And that means national bestseller lists, you know, broadly defined audiences of so-called mainstream or general interest readers that completely ignore thriving niches across the industry, both in traditional publishing as well as in self-publishing. So, you know, one of the things I'm curious about is, you know, a lot of people in publishing think about gamers, you know, you used one of the stereotypes, short attention span. There are gamers who spend way more time deeply engaged in games for hours a week, not just playing the game, but engaging in the community around that game and creating their own content related to it, diving into the lore behind it. So that idea that, oh, gamers don't have the attention span for reading is a negative stereotype that's pretty prevalent in publishing, that A, ignores a number of popular gaming properties either started from books and were adapted, or went the opposite direction, and entire book line, best-selling book lines have been built around those gaming franchises. Every new Halo novel, you know, hits the bestseller list. Nobody considers gamers more than a niche, though.
Well, good. I'm glad you corrected me. And I plead guilty, I think, to suffering from some of these assumptions that a lot of publishers have. And that seems to me that maybe one of the interesting things that might be coming out of the study, that you're going to be overturning some of these assumptions that people have, that maybe lead publishers to making a lot of bad decisions, or they're publishing for a market that has already passed them by. You know, their thinking is maybe 5 years out of date. Do you think that the results of your study are in the end going to be helping publishers make better decisions, or at least understand better who their readers are and where they are?
That's what we're hoping, is that what we get out of this is two big things. One, the ability for the industry to come together and develop a project like this that attempts to answer some questions that different pockets of the industry have. You know, so when the results come out, one thing we won't have is any particular stakeholder debating the methodology, or, you know, dismissing the results because of the way the questions were asked. The cross-industry participation in its development says, okay, we've agreed that we may debate interpreting the results. There will be no debate about how we defined what we were studying, the questions we asked, and how we built the methodology around who the respondents were, because that was a cross-industry collaboration. So part of my hope is this becomes the foundation for working together more effectively and efficiently to find some of these more difficult answers that we have, particularly related to libraries. The second part is a clearer view of the reading consumer beyond the stereotype of who allegedly is the core audience that drives the bestseller list.
And when do you expect this survey to be finished and then released?
So one of our adjustments to dealing with the impact of the pandemic was we're going to launch this in two waves. So we're fielding it first shortly after Labor Day. We're going to get our first wave of responses, and then we're going to wait about 6 to 8 weeks, probably mid-October, feel the second wave to see. So we'll still most likely still be in the heart of the pandemic. No major changes we're expecting, but we'll be deeper into it. So we'll get another set of answers. Our goal is about 3,500 respondents total, which will give us a really strong nationally representative sample that will hold up in terms of, you know, margin of error and everything. And then our goal is to get some initial results out shortly after Thanksgiving and a final report out before the end of the year.
And will that be publicly available?
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the main goals for Panorama Project is everything we do, we want publicized and not just kept for individual stakeholders. One of the main reasons we worked with associations instead of individual publishers was to avoid, you know, Penguin Random House would have absolutely participated in this, but then you get the question of, well, how much did Penguin Random House influence this? Do they have some data that nobody else is seeing? By working with the associations, we've got the ability to fully publicize, you know, our data set, the question, you know, we'll put the full survey out there so people can see exactly the questions we asked and what the branching looked like and everything, and then the full results. We'll produce the analysis, but we'll also make the full data set available as well. We want this to really be a benefit to the industry overall, at both publishers and libraries, as well as, you know, the broader, you know, booksellers are potentially impacted by the findings of this. Authors themselves can take this as useful information.
Great. Well, we're certainly looking forward to it, and the fact that it's going to be publicly available is really going to be helpful to a lot of people who, you know, can't afford the large surveys that are done by some of the other companies out there. This is going to be great. So we've been talking with Guy LeCharles Gonzalez, who is the project lead for the Panorama Project. And if you want to find out more about the Panorama Project and what they're doing and get more details, especially on the Immersive Media and Reading 2020 survey that they're in the midst of right now, go to panoramaproject.org. Well, thank you very much for speaking with us today, Guy.
Hey, thanks for having me. And I just also want to thank IBPA for their participation in the survey. It's the association's support that's really making this possible, particularly in making it freely available to everybody. So thanks to IBPA as well.
Thanks again to Guy LeCharles Gonzalez of the Panorama Project. I really enjoyed this conversation, not only because Guy's points were particularly well stated, but because it showed me that I am operating on a lot of wrongheaded and out-of-date assumptions about readers and what motivates them and where book engagement is these days. Clearly, there's a lot going on with readers and books that is way beyond just buying a book. And I think that that has implications for where readers go to find books, but also what kinds of calls to actions publishers place in their marketing materials and other outreach. And one of the best things about this is that the results of this research are going to be released to the public. And that is a really wonderful gift. And coincidentally, it comes around the end of the year, near Christmas time. So thanks to the Panorama Project for that. And by the way, it's great too that Guy and his team actively sought out associations like IBPA as a source of reliable, unprejudiced data. Now, if you have thoughts on this program or any other comments about publishing or suggestions for future topics, write to me at Peter Goodman or at IBPA on Twitter. And as always, check out IBPA and all the membership benefits and resources at ibpa-online.org. I'm Peter Goodman, and as my bosses in Japan used to say, let's have publishing fun and stay healthy.